Well, I think the poetry is great. And, I don't know if I think I just saw the issue with. No, I got buy them. You don't give copies away at those times. How much does it cost to get out a deal like that? Is it expensive? I mean, is that an offset?
It's a mimeographed.
It's a mimeographed.
And the first one was mimeographed.
What?
We had already paid
there's
for some.
There's one out now that's printed. Or just coming out. They've started printing it. I don't know what that means.
I don't know why you should print it. Seems to me it's very nice.
Well,
that
I think
way
it's probably mistake because
you can read it. It must be very expensive.
Going to, a lot of money in the printing of it.
Have you seen these two?
I just saw them, and I was wondering where I just seen them. Somebody showed them to me. Even when he had the last one, I did.
Well, this is the first one. Really. Doesn't that say volume?
Why should they print it? This is such a... Isn't that a... It's such a good-looking job, and it's so beautiful. I didn't see any reason for printing. Then you begin to get into money, and...
But they were cool for having samples.
One of the guys who works on
newspaper
put out by the clothing.
Looks like
your typewriter. He's getting a special deal. So it's going to be a whole lot cheaper than it normally would be approved.
Well, it's expensive when you get into printing.
Also, it's sort of a commitment you can't really back away from. You know, in bankruptcy or something like that. And so I don't know. I think, too, maybe they're taking a bigger step than they want to take.
Well, I like the venture. I think there's something nice about having it in that kind of...
So we were talking about
more fragile form,
yeah,
like venture.
I
wish we could have just dozens of magazines.
Yeah,
like
you can see
the
idea that I hold very strongly.
Every sizable city and every place with two or three writers should have one.
Oh, no. If you had the
sort of holding his breath, waiting to write the last... comma in a thing that's going to be absolutely perfect, which is never going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And it's better to have a sort of a battle about things, in a friendly kind of way, than to have the sort of thing where everybody holds his breath for 5 or 6 years while somebody is going to say the ultimate word on this book or that subject. And then once it's said, nothing else can be said about it, or else you become you become some sort of an apostate or something, because you're taking some sort of name in vain, or criticism for years, this kind of notion, and that there should be a little more sort of rough and tumble in a, in a friendly kind of way, the notion that it's going to take a long time before any particular thing has the final word said about it.
Well, there ought to be more.
Done quite a bit about getting an audience that's not sort of outside the usual left-wing audience.
Well, I hear it these days, I think.
There's still the, a lot. At the time we began it, we were thinking in terms of something for something like 35 cents, but that was before we began to go around and talk to printers about it. And then from year to year, they went up and up. And even though we had a very cheap printer, I think somebody who who had estimated the thing wrongly and went on estimating it wrongly for maybe a year and a half. But it's the cost of printing the magazine, the size of the quarterly, is almost prohibitive now.
Well, you needed some very good typists.
Would be to take every issue down to
for people who want to go to schools.
Tijuana and have it printed there.
Oh, it's pretty cheap there.
Oh, sure.
But you also are absolutely guaranteed not to get it with less than 50 errors.
Well, some of them would
be interesting. Have you ever tried to see if you could get it set in one of the school print shops? Or have they got too much stuff for the Board of Education?
Yeah, I tried that when I was still at the state. And there they were filled up with stuff, and anyway, once they knew what we were doing, they wouldn't have been able to handle it. So to go to Mexico City, take your tape recorder along, and you get enough for 5 or 6 years.
That's what I
heard. Very short time. There's a friend of ours there. I don't know if you've met him, Rosemary. Mac Blair. He's
Mac and Mag.
Mac. He was deported last year, and he was, he was the sidekick of Harry Hines, and was all through the whole business, the MWIU out here in the Silliness Valley thing, when he wasn't in that, but most of his friends were, and then through all of the things in the East Coast, all the
aren't those great stories? You know, people don't know anything about them. The generation has grown up since then. And the way they tell them is so great.
Yeah. He's a wonderful storyteller.
And all that culture just goes to waste in all this pure form business and getting something in.
All around the thing.
Free Tom Mooney. I remember her.
That's
just
the name,
but
she has a house up there.
That's
still up there.
She died.
She died, and this was in the library.
Well, I know that I have a copy of that book, which I won't let anyone take out of the house. I'm so afraid I'll lose it.
You know how I feel about this book? After I got it and brought it home, clutching it to my bosom and so on, and looking at it, then I began to have a feeling of terrible guilt, because this isn't the sort of book that a person should own with this in it. And I thought, gee, it should be in a library or in a museum or something where all kinds of people could come and see this. And, of course, here I kind of keep it hidden and bring it out when
Do your children look at it? My children and grandchildren got their whole Marxist education from that book.
Oh, really? Oh, that's... The three poems that Tom's going to read now are from To Walk a Crooked Mile.
Such Simple Love. All night long I hear the sleepers toss between the darkened window and the wall. The madman's whimper and the lover's voice, the worker's whisper and the sick child's call. Knowing them all, I'd walk a mile, maybe, hearing some cat crying its guts out to throttle it by hand. Such simple love I had. I wished I might, or God, might answer each call in person and each poor demand. Well, I'd have been better off sleeping myself. These fancies had some sentimental charm, but love without direction is a cheap blanket. And even if it did no one any harm, no one is warm. This one's called The Heroes of Childhood. The heroes of childhood were simple and austere, and their pearl-handled six guns never missed fire. They filled all their straits, were lucky at dice. In a town full of bad men, they never lost face. When they looked under beds, there was nobody there. We saluted the outlaw whose heart was pure when he stuck up the stage or the mail car. Big Bill Haywood or Two Gun Marks, who stood against the bankers and all their works. they robbed the rich and gave to the poor. But we in our time are not so sure. When the posse catches us, our guns hang fire. And strung up from the wagon tongues of long reflection, our hearts are left hanging by the contradiction which history imposes on our actions here. Perhaps we were mistaken, it has been so long, in the fierce purpose of these dead-eyed dams. Did they too wake at night in a high fever and wonder when direction would be clear, if ever? For the saint is the man most likely to do wrong. In any case, we later ones can only hope for the positive landmark on the distant slope. Moving through this dead world's contradiction, the heart must build its own direction, which only in the future has a permanent shape. This one is called The Seekers. Our grandfathers were strangers, and their absurd notions, said uncle to a century that built few fences. Pragmatists with six guns, their dreams were never fancy. Beyond their mustaches, their eyes eloped with nations. Their caravans set wagon tongues at a peculiar star. Led at last to mountains, they sought to map fidelity. Went loco in windy canyons, but lost, they looked harder and harder. Our fathers, more complex and less heroic, were haunted by more ghosts than an empty house. Their joy was to thumb their hearts over. Masked like Freud, they entered their unconscious by the second story. But what they were seeking or how it looked or sounded, we heard about only once in a blue moon, though they expected to know it if they ever found it. Every direction has its attendant devil, and their safaris weren't conducted on the boss's time. For what they were hunting is certainly never tame, and for the poor is usually illegal. Maybe with maps made, going would be faster, but the maps made for tourists in their private cars have no names for brotherhood or justice, and in any case, we'll have to walk because we're going farther.
Choosing one from here. The next one is going to be from Longshot O'Leary's Garland of Practical Poesy. Just one selection from there.
Ready? Okay. This is from Longshot O'Leary's Garland of Practical Poesy. The poem is called Poor John Luck and the Middle Class Struggle, or The Corpse in the Bookkeeper's Body. The clock uncoils the working day, and he wakes up feeling that his youth has gone away. Over the Eucharist of toast and coffee, he dreams of a Jerusalem where he was happy, but the cops came and got him when he was still young, and they gave him ambition and a clock to punch. Oh, poor John, poor John. Then he claps him into clothes, and he falls downstairs, and the street absorbs him as if he weren't there. Reassembled in the subway as in the womb, he relaxes on tenterhooks to wait his time. Reads of Armageddon on the sporting page and appraises best breast and buttock without getting an edge. Oh, poor John, poor John. The street rolls up till his office reaches him and the door puts out its knob and drags him in. His desk trap is baited with the kill of the day. He sets it off by touching it and can't get away. So with profit and loss and commerce and knavery, the day is passed in business and thievery. Oh, poor John, poor John. And just when the mind might snap and go sane, the 5 o'clock whistle brings life back again. Usury and simony have buried the day. The closing stock quotations bear the sun away. And into the 5 o'clock shadow of the bars goes poor John Luck and his crying nerves. Oh, poor John, poor John. At 3 past Scotch, it is time to go home to the little woman and the sharp smell of doom from the overripe radio. Free John Luck drops a penny from his eye into the magic jukebox, but can't get the number as he never can now, because a witch stole his spell in the long, long ago. Oh, poor John, poor John. Then home to his castle and the sacramental beef, and after the dishes to the movies for them both. Embalmed in the darkness of their deadly wish, the warped ears fall at their feet like a dress, while snowed to the bricks, hopped up and healed, they throw an endless gun on their Monday selves. Oh, poor John, poor John. But their Tuesday souls will be waiting in the street when the lights go on and everyone starts at his naked neighbor. And the lights go on. The clock starts ticking, and the heart of man closes its shutters on its dreaming hurt as another day falls into the files of the past. Oh, poor John, poor John, poor John. I give it a whirl, but I never have read this poem out loud. And I,
well, you're saying that you're reading it for Deborah because it's... She liked it.
Why don't you read it out loud?
Oh, pretty baby, put your tricks aside. Your hair so golden and your skin so white. But the roads are out and the river's up, and I feel in my heart like a lonesome child. I can do without fame. I can do without money. I can do without books or winters in Miami. But in our sixth season, when love seems treason, I can't be happy with you or without you, honey. With half the world dying and the other half dead, there just isn't anywhere room for us in bed. The powerful pray in the murderer's pew and prepare to shake the lightning down around our heads. Too many crying in this dark street. You can't make love and you can't go to sleep. Gunfire breaks in the striker's block, and I can't hear a word you're saying to me, sweet. Oh, pretty baby, it's a sad, sad day. There's soldiers on the hills again, cruisers in the bay. But until the hour when love takes power, we won't surrender, baby, and we can't run away.
Poems I liked in this book, too.
You never know everything. What's next? Oh, poems are in a small collection called Witness to the Times. And this mimeograph booklet of poems was put out at the time that Tom was fired from Los Angeles State College after the Un-American Activities Committee had subpoenaed him. A group of his students decided that a way to honor him would be to mimeograph a collection of his poems. They thought this was... The poems in this book were selected by his students, and the introduction was written by one of his students, and part of it says that the publication this is the first time that students have honored an instructor in quite this manner, assuming the role of his editor and publisher. We would not do this, however, no matter how excellent a poet or teacher Tom McGrath might be, if he were not also an excellent man. For although he excels as an artist and as a teacher, it is chiefly because he excels as a man that we so honor him. Another poet has written, "Ah, what an age it is when to speak of trees is almost a crime, for it is a kind of silence about injustice." We honor Tom McGrath because he has not been silent about injustice. We honor him because he speaks well and because he has something to say. We honor him because he is more than a witness to the times, because he is helping to change the times. And the title of this book is Witness to the Times.
This is a poem from Witness to the Times called Christmas Music. Winter proclaims its chilly benedictions, and silence is polarized in the boreal night. The moon licks at the earth with a tongue of light.
solstice has spoken of peace to men and nations. Planted by dark of the moon, unseasonal notions have ripened to hope of a god, but nothing stirs where Jupiter wanders with his strumpets, sailing the dark on their cosmic inhuman missions. Yet once the starlight to the warring east proclaimed the birth of one poor carpenter, the prince of peace who could not stop a war nor stay the sleepy hangman from his task. Our peace this day is seasonal and cold as light of distant stars when sun goes south, and we are like freezing soldiers lying out upon a field of history, yet bold to ask from each his gift, to each his need, now in the season when all gifts are given, to build on earth, not in the far heaven, the human city of our daily bread.
I don't think I can read. No? This is Blues for an Interim, read for Debbie. Oh, pretty baby, put your tricks aside, your hair's so golden and your skin so white, but the roads are out and the river is up, and I feel in my heart like a lonesome child. I can do without fame, I can do without money, I can do without books or winters in Miami. But in our sixth season, when love seems treason, I can't be happy with you or without you, honey. With half the world dying and the other half dead, there just isn't anywhere room for us in bed. The powerful prey and the murderer's pew, and prepare to shake the lightning down around our heads. Too many crying in this dark street, you can't make love and you can't go to sleep. Gunfire breaks in the striker's block, and I can't hear a word that you're saying to me, sweet. Oh, pretty baby, it's a sad, sad day. There's soldiers on the hills again, cruisers in the bay. But until the hour when love takes power, we won't surrender, baby, and we can't run away. It really...
What? What next?
The next selections are from Tom's book, Figures.
I should do the...
From a Double World.
The Prophet, the Incident in the Life of the Prophet.
I have that. Oh, I had it marked here.
Oh, this is a jolly one. None of these are funny. I should read a few funny poems. This is called An Incident in the Life of a Prophet. It's also from Witness to the Times.
And a voice like a voice in dreams cried out in the stone wilderness, calling out of the whirlwind, sounding its gongs and thunders, saying death to the four kings of indifference, to all despoilers of sweat and virtue, and death to the defamers of the sacrament of wheat. Destroy the temples of these pious sinners. And the liberals said, hush, mate, we know it is hard, and naturally we will help, but you must be conscious of the danger of letting the people know they've been had. For Christ's sake, don't wake up that sleeping monster. And the voice as a burning dove flew out of a blue Monday with an iron curse in its throat like the spike of the morning whistle, saying death to the three whores of history, church, state, and property, and these privileged coiners of the counterfeit currency of life. Level the stations of compulsion, time's stony circuits. And the hireling said, now shut your trap, Jack. You're beginning to sound like a man with his head underwater. Lie back and relax, and everything will be Jake, or there'll be hell before breakfast and no snow all winter. And the voice cried down like a bell from the ruined tower of conscience, shaking the chromium flowers in the garden of moral decrees, saying death to the nuns of coercion who steal the candy of childhood. Woe to that subtle thief of youth, the nine-armed god of usury, whose hands are in everyone's pockets. And the doctor said, with a slick shine in his eyes and a skin full of hop
lie down and count to 20. And he turned to the banker and said, knife and forceps, please. And they broke into his body without warrant of entry. But the voice cried like a trumpet from the nave of the slashed throat. The heart leaped out of the broken trench of his breast and shouted. Out of the ports of his eyes flew the hawks of the first four seasons. Born from his dreaming blood was the red flag of the fifth. These poems are from Figures from a Double World. This one's called The Roads into the Country. The roads into the country ran only in one direction in childhood's years, into mysterious counties beyond the farm or the town. Toward the parish of desire, the roads led up or down, past a thicket of charms, a river of wishing hours. Till, wrapped in a plenum of undying sun, we heard the tick of air guns on the hills. The pheasant stalked by on his gilded heels. The soft-eyed foxes from the woods looked on, while hung upon the blue wall of the air, the hawk stared down into a sea of fire, where, salamanders in our element, we ate the summer like a sacrament. That was another country and is lost. The roads lead nowhere. Aloof in his field of fire, the hawk wheels pitiless. Alone, afar, the skirmishers of childhood hurry past, hunting a future that they cannot will. Children of light, traveling our darkened years, we cannot warn them. Distant, they have no ears for those they will become. Across a wall of terror and innocence, we hear the voice, the air gun in the land of all mock choice. Around us, not the game of fox and pheasant, but the gunfire of the real and terrible present. The World of the Perfect Tear was written for my brother Jimmy McGrath, who was killed in a plane crack up in 1945. Fire from a fixed star locates no place you are. No warmth left in the air reminds that you were there. Everything you were is canceled in the earth, and memory's single tear drowns all your footprints here. Yet in that crystal sphere, all is reflected clear, though no one can stand tall where earth itself is small and fire is cool and air thinner than breath. Still there, the elements prevail, reduced in memory's scale. Sad joke to entomb you here in the damp world of a tear, though we navigate that globe with a Magellan love. Still, more like the flood, this drop or dead man's ark will whirl and whelm the dying world to raise the living up.
Long.
Escape is one of my favorite poems too, and
let's just do Escape.
No,
this is a poem called Escape, which is from a magazine called Coastlines. Hunting in the dark, my father found me. My mother claimed me and led me into light from my nine-month winter. In the herds of right, branded and bawling, the christeners bound me. God-given, church-shriven, hell-washed away, Adam-purged, heaven-urged, the dog would have his day. Hell all about me with its infantry, storming the fortress of my crying years, could not get my notice. They had stopped my ears with chrism of love in my infancy.
world poor, world pure, I kept my head level, unproud, but uncowed, shaming the devil. And thus betrayed, I fell into a world where love lives only in another name. At 11 or 12, when the kidnappers came, I took the poisoned candy and off we whirled. Innocence, nonsense, the seven priestly lies surrounded me when, hands bound, I opened my eyes onto the bloody barnyard of my youth, where the wet pig wetly squealed against the wall and fell on the stone crop. False, rich, tall, the elders judged me. The stone edge of truth, flint sharp, heartless, stabbed my begging knee. Harmed me, but armed me, I cut my hands free. All right. This is a poem called The Hunted Revolutionaries, from an issue of the California Quarterly. The poem was written for Harry Winston. Part 1. He hears the sound of hunting at San Pedro, beside the last ocean. Evening, with gull cry and a wind out of the bay, where mournful a ship's horn sounds and the bell of a drowned buoy, flinging a warning call from the cold sea. Quiet the wave, oiled where a freighter curves toward the dream countries. Schooled like fish on a shoal or a flight of meteors, the bicycle lights of the workers shawl the hills of foreign cities, fall toward the factory quarters and the new day. Manhattan holds on its chilly spires three stars and darkness. But westward the light still lasts, and a gull cries and the wind complains. The false lights of the sun, smoky and tranquil, lie on the wave tops. I sit at the beach in the light of a gone day, and I wait for the hunters. Part 2. He imagines the great demons of the four corners of his country. The violent darkness claims us all. The indifferent demon of the north sends his abstract anguish forth, tall as you are and more tall. The violent darkness claims us all. Tall as you are and more tall, the impotent demon of the south tears the tongue from the honest mouth. The violent darkness claims us all, tall as you are and more tall. The violent darkness claims us all, the mechanical demon of the east, the inflated demon of the west. Tall as you are and more tall, the violent darkness claims us all. The violent darkness claims us all. Now all your angels summon forth from east and west and south and north, tall as you are and more tall. Part 3. He calls upon the powers of the earth. The dark is in love with forms of light. Angel of conscience of the north, assure all mortals mortal worth. Stars shine clearest in darkest night. I summon the angel of the north. Stars shine clearest in darkest night. O randy angel of the south, be lust of joy in the fields of sloth. An indifferent joy is man's secret fate. I summon the angel of the south. An indifferent joy is our secret fate. Anarchic angel of the west, in solidarity bind what's loosed. All bitterness in time grows sweet. I summon the angel of the west. All bitterness in time grows sweet. Shepherding angel of the east, organize concord in the breast. The dark is in love with forms of light. I summon the angel of the east. The dark is in love with forms of light, tall as you are and more tall. Though the violent darkness claim us all, an indifferent joy is our secret fate. The stars shine clearest in darkest night. All bitterness in time grows sweet. Part 4. He remembers the tradition of pursuit and struggle. And now evening and gull cry, for the just and the unjust, impartial evening. Zodiacal light, starlight, light of search warrants. The last wagon train is burning in ambush. Dark now all the states, and night on the west coast. Darkness and exile, and now the kind man who only pitied exiles will blindly look at the map where his perhaps home, graced with a foreign name, waits for the great ship. Somewhere under the line, he will cheer for the fighters. For they will hunt you, O revolutionaries, hunt you in darkness. The slogan chalked on the wall is your magical sign, icon of terrible love, the dark of the calendar. They hunt you, listening for a sound of gunfire. But now the silence and the neutral stars on the sea, sirens waiting, the waves' long lamentation. Endured by millions, this darkness and the hunting, capture, death, victory, like the struggle, the changeless sea, like the constant stars, endure, resist, endure.
That's the end of the poem. And this is the poem. They want war. He who wrote it has already fallen. Isn't that wonderful?
That's the whole poem.
Yeah. This is one called When the Leaders Speak of Peace. And the poem goes, the common folk know that war is coming. When the leaders curse war, the mobilization order is already written out.
That's what you're not.
Escape of exile. But even I, on the last boat, saw the gaiety of dawn in the rigging and the grayish bodies of dolphins emerge from the Japanese sea. The little horse carts with gilt decorations and the pink sleeves of the matrons in the alleys of doomed Manila, the fugitive beheld the joy. The oil derricks and the thirsty gardens of Los Angeles and the ravines of California at evening and the fruit market did not leave the messenger of misfortune unmoved. But on my wall hangs a Japanese carving, the mask of an evil demon decorated with gold lacquer. Sympathetically, I observe the swollen veins of the forehead, indicating what a strain it is to be evil.
Mm-hmm. The other fellow is dead. Now, no one's ever heard of him, but Breck lives.
Can you tell what happened to him? You don't have to name him. No, but I think it's a terrible story. And
I don't know the story, so I really can't tell it.
But I mean, what he did was something.
A very strange fellow. I was scared of him myself. Mother thought he had a beautiful face.
All right, now the story.
But I was very frightened of him. I look at him and I couldn't get very close. He'd always, he'd sort of peer down at you and talk.
Here's one of them. This is the first of them. Oh, excuse me. Well, are you going to tell it? Good.
I don't know, but maybe it's a story.
It's connected with the other. It's a great mm-hmm. story.
Well, anyway, he's a...
I mean, this man has been living here all this time from fascist Germany. You know, he's not a great
science teacher.
Or something. He's been trying to make a living
He wrote in Germany, he wrote books, children's books, and then he, during the war, he went to France, became a war correspondent, did quite a few things, and then he came to America and began teaching science in, where he could get a job in private schools, I guess, but I don't think he could teach it publicly. So he evidently had some problems in teaching. He was very good with some children, and done some things with some children that no one else could do. But he was in a room with these children in which he was supposed to teach, and one boy was leaning out the window with a mirror flashing the sun on the fences, and this irritated him very much, and he kept telling the boy to sit down, and the boy didn't. And finally this incited him to great violence. He ran and he grabbed the boy and threw him with such violence out the door that his shoe came off into a corner in the hall. And then he went up and he kicked him with such violence that it made such a bruise, the center of the bruise bled. He could have broken his ribs, you know, he's a small fourth grader boy. And then I believe he went back in the room or outside or something. This boy was screaming in the hall. And one child in the room was so frightened for the boy that he got thrown out that he ran into the hall and he stood over the boy like this so that when the head teacher came, he wasn't even going to let her touch this boy. You know, just stood right over him, protecting him, and so no one could come near him. He was so frightened at this adult violence to this other child. And, I don't know, there's no end.
No, there's no end.
Concerning 4BB. I, Bertolt Brecht, come from the Black Forest. My mother carried me to town while in her womb I lay, and still the coldness of the woods lingers and shall remain in me until my dying day. I am at home on pavements, from the beginning well provided with extreme unction, sacrament of newspapers and tobacco, and likewise brandy, mistrustful, lazy, yet in the end content. I make friends with people, and I wear a derby on my head as others do. I say, they're strangely stinking animals, and I say, no matter. I am too. Forenoons in my rocking chair I sit between a couple of women, days on end, and I gaze upon them carelessly and say, here you have a man on whom you can't depend. I gather some fellows around me in the evening. We address each other as gentlemen. They put their feet up on my table and say, things will improve. I don't ask when. Toward morning, the fir trees piss in the gray light, and their vermin, the birds, begin to cheep. At this hour in town, I empty my glass. I knock out my pipe, and unquietly I sleep. A fickle race, we have lived in houses said to be built indestructibly. As we reared the tall buildings of Manhattan Island and the thin antenna that span the Atlantic Sea. There shall remain of these cities but the wind that blew through them. The house maketh the feaster merry. It is emptied out. We know that we are makeshift, and after us will come practically naught. In the earthquakes to come, it is to be hoped I shan't allow bitterness to quench my cigar's glow. I, Bertolt Brecht,
astray in cement cities, brought from the woods in my mother long ago. Isn't that a wonderful poem?
Poor stuff. It's a shame to use something only once if it is worth it. Draw back. Draw back. Let no more tears be shed. Join hands, brothers, sisters, with the will, the heart, the love of peace. Peace is life to me. My home, warm on cold winter days, or fresh and open wide to the warm airs of summer, grass green and sprinkler whirring, tomatoes on the vine, the children running, laughing, shouting, lifting heads up with a question and waiting wide-eyed for the answer, the baby's tiny fingers reaching for a button or sliding into her mouth, sweetly content at bedtime. The splash of water as my husband scrubs the day's dirt off his hands, and the music that shakes the house when his calloused fingers touch the piano. Mingled with it are my kitchen noises, the simmering of our supper on the stove. I cannot clean this house. A grimy path of footprints passes through. The gate is always open for all to enter. Join hands, brothers, sisters, in warmth and friendship, side by side to work and play. Borrow an egg, lend a cup of sugar, give a recipe, get a plant slip. Exchange, fellowship. Let no more tears be shed. To know today no bombs will fall, no homes will burn with jelly gas, no young lives fall in cold steel slaughter. To sit at my window and watch the wind and the dry leaves, to know that the cold winter will not be cruel, that all the world will be at peace to build its shelters, light its fires, and draw its warmth around it, to nurture its seed for spring when all life can burst forth again, knowing at last that freely it can bear its fruit. This we can do, we with the will, the heart, the love of peace. To those who grow fat on war, we say, monsters, the steel will make your bellies burst, the flesh, the seed will triumph. Let those who made millions building bombers build schools to earn their daily bread, a more honorable bread, and their digestions will be better. Let the shipbuilders build the ship. Let the free waves carry the tractors over the seas to the farmers who wait to plow their soil. Freely, freely interchange their wealth to us, our riches to them, and all men, brothers, sisters over the earth,
our children playing together in sunshine and smiles. Chinese brocaded silk, Indian cotton, American nylon, Russian furs, English wool to clothe the world. Draw back, I saw a child die, a precious, sparkling, loving child, one child, and so many tears were shed. How many tears for the children of Korea? Will we learn, we can stop it. We, with the will, the heart, the love of peace. A tired voice speaks. We promise to fight. We hate war, but what can we do? We made treaties, we promised. Oh, promises. To keep the promises we made for peace. The peace we must keep. How many tears for the children of Korea? Do you know how many babies died? Remember the children still alive. Think of the guns still poised, the triggers cocked. Draw back, let no more tears be shed. And what have you done, and you? Have you helped your neighbor find his voice, his strength, his life? Have you helped him find his brother? White woman, have you called a Negro woman sister? No peace can live without the brotherhood of man. Join hands, brothers, sisters. Our hands are small, but warm, alive, and strong as steel. Our hands together can form a bond of love no bomb can tear apart. Our hands together can destroy the bomb. The flesh, the seed will triumph.
Yes,
Scalp you.